case law created. Once the public is aware of what happened, there'll be a trial judge who will say, you violated the spirit of immunity, and that'll be that. That'll be case law. So the court of public opinion is where we win, and that's how laws change.
And welcome to another episode of TFEC Shot Callers. I am Carrie Bigford, Outreach Director with Texans for Vaccine Choice. And today we are joined with a very special guest, Ed Dowd. Ed Dowd is currently the founding partner of Finance Technologies, which is a global macro alternative investment firm. And he is also the author of the book, Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 21 and 2022. And today, Ed and I are going to be breaking down some of the new COVID-19 injury disability data and a few other topics related to that. Thank you so much for taking the time to learn with us today. And without further ado, the amazing Ed Dowd.
Thank you for having me on today, Carrie. Appreciate being here.
Thank you so much. So tell us about the Humanity Projects.
Yeah, so my journey began several years ago, when the vaccine mandates hit. I did not take the vaccine personally because my Wall Street experience gave me knowledge, I guess, that other people didn't have. I knew vaccines take 7 to 10 years to be properly vetted, usually, and that this was a new novel technology that had never been tested on humans, only animals, and that the animal studies were bad. And I also knew it was Operation Warp Speed, which... knowing things about manufacturing processes, as I do from my Wall Street experience, anything rushed tends to introduce a whole host of problems, safety corners cut. You had to take what was in a laboratory manufacturing process and then expand it to billions of doses. And we can talk about that as well. And that was rife with pitfalls. So anecdotally, when the vaccine was rolled out, I started hearing all sorts of issues, which statistically I shouldn't be hearing. Are there safe vaccines? You know, I don't want to get into that, but typically if one was safe, you would not be hearing personally of so many side effects and or deaths and or injuries. And I knew something was up. When the mandates came, that's when I lost my mind, became activated, met up with Dr. Robert Malone in Maui. He came to Maui in October for some mandate protests. And he elevated my work, which turned into eventually hooking up with Carlos Alegria and Yuri Nunes of Finance Technologies. We have a firm. We're pre-revenue. And we decided to, before we even started raising money for our hedge fund, which we're now trying to do actively, we decided it was important to investigate the strange sudden increase in all-cause mortality in the Western nations, which led us to then investigate disability increases, and now injury increases, which manifest in lost work time and absence rates. And we've done thousands and thousands of hours of free work that is on our website published. It's financetechnologies.com with a PH. It's a Humanity Projects. And we saw that there was a problem with the regulators, that perhaps they might have been compromised through financial incentives and political incentives. And we started reporting what we saw in the publicly available governmental databases. And the story, unfortunately, is horrific and tragic. And, we continue to delve even deeper. We've gone into different types of disabilities in the UK where the data is available. We've gone into our cardiovascular issues in young people in the UK. We've done cancer studies in the UK, and now we've started rolling out CDC cancer reports, most recently in the US, and we have other projects that are being released this week, a deeper dive into cancer in older people, and a dive into neurological deaths and disabilities as well that started mysteriously, and I say that jokingly, started inflecting in 2021.
So you've been busy, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Can you give me specifics on some of the data, especially with, let's say, one of the questions that I get a lot is, why are we only using UK data? Why isn't all of our data US data? Can you elaborate on why you have to use UK data?
Well, we only use UK data for the initially cancer studies and drilling down into specific disabilities. We've been using US disability data all along. The disability data in the US is quite simple. It's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's a survey, and they statistically impute the number of people identifying as disabled, unable to work. That was, generally speaking, prior to COVID, running around 30 million. And this is what I like about this data is it's real-time survey, and it's monthly, along with the payroll numbers you see. These are the same folks that give us our unemployment rate and the unemployment numbers. And it was running around 29, it was bouncing between 29 and 30 million the prior 4 or 5 years. And then in around February of 2021, it took off. And it took off, and you don't even need to be a genius to analyze this. It looks like a growth stock chart where, you know, again, I'm a growth stock investor. You have a chart that's kind of going sideways, and then it goes like this, and it breaks out. So we added between February of 21 and December 23, about 4 million newly disabled people. And they really started ticking up in 21, to the so much so that the rate of change, the rate of growth of this new phenomenon was three or four standard deviations from trend.
Which, so can you explain what that means? Because I get that question a lot, and that's not my area of expertise at all.
So in finance and science, we try to look for trend changes, things to explain what's going on. And basically, there's a mean or average that a phenomenon occurs around, especially a trend or a growth rate that's pretty normally distributed. So data points around the mean fall around the mean, and there can be growth then or degrowth. Doesn't matter. There's a trend line, and you analyze the observation statistically above the trend line. So one or two standard deviations is noise, and then three standard deviations from the mean on either side can be either side of the mean is happens 0.3% of the time. Wow. Meaning that's a statistical, we call it a signal.
Right.
And so when you get three standard deviations, you have a signal. And to put that into context for your listeners, what does three standard deviations mean? I said it was 0.3%, but let's get even more granular. 3.8 standard deviations is the chance of lightning hitting you at least once in your lifetime. So if it's above three standard deviations, it's not supposed to happen. It's very rare. And we have signals in all of our work all over the place that are well above three. They're everywhere. We have signals everywhere. And with the disability data, the growth rate was so fast and sudden, it was about four standard deviations above the trend. So something occurred starting in around February of 2021. And we added another 4 million people. It peaked out in September of 2022 at about 3 million, went sideways into 23, then jumped up again another million in June of 23. So the trend is still going. The point I want to make is the trend is still up and to the right. So it looks like a growth stock chart. You have a basing period, a breakout, then a consolidation, then another breakout. If this was a stock and it was a growth stock, I would own maximum size position and be adding on strength. So what did we find when we broke down the data? Of those 4 million newly added individuals, about half came from the employed. Half. Okay. Then when you drill down into the disability rates and the change in the disability rates of the different subsets of the total population, the employed cohort saw a 38% rate of change in their disability rate. The civilian workforce saw around 30, and the general U.S. population saw 8%. So typically speaking, employed people by their very nature are healthier than the overall population.
In the prime of their life.
They're in the prime of their life.
Right.
They're getting in a car every morning and going to work. They're able to do things. That shot up. The other thing we found was the not in labor force. Those are people who are able and willing to work, but are in between jobs. Their disability rate of change was 4% increase.
Wow.
So this is where we speculate. So, well, what happened to cause this shift? Well, using Occam's razor and simple deductive reasoning, we said perhaps the introduction of the vaccine caused this, that was mandated for most employers.
Right.
And then, interestingly enough, you either took the shot or you quit because you didn't want to take the shot, or you were fired for not taking the shot. That would then give that result in the non-labor force. So those who decided to sit out had a better health outcome than those who remained in the workforce. Simple logic. Then when we correlate the vaccine uptake to the disability rise in disabilities, now they'll say correlation is not causation, but we found a 0.92 R squared, which is a fit of what's explainable by these two variables. Disabilities rising and vaccine rollout, 92% of the new disabilities were explained by the vaccine rollout. Oh, that's we call that a clue.
Yep.
Our biggest problem is we're at the point now where we believe 150 to 200% the vaccine is causing the vast majority of excess deaths, disabilities, and these injuries. It's now the onus is on the regulators and the manufacturers of these products to prove we're wrong, not the other way around.
How have the regulators responded to this information? I know that you've presented to them in the past.
Well, no, well, I've gone in front of Ron Johnson, the CDC, and the NIA. They don't show up to these hearings. It's been crickets. No one seems to care. What I will say is there was a CDC report that was recently FOIA requested that was talking about, I think, myocarditis.
The one that was fully redacted, 142 pages.
148, all 142 pages, fully redacted.
So, it's almost like they didn't care about our safety.
Imagine that.
Imagine.
Yeah. And you know, so people, a lot of people will say to themselves that aren't in the knowledge base we are. When you go to someone new and say, look, this has happened, they'll say, no, the people watching this would never let it happen. Well, I want to bring you back to the great financial crisis. There was something called a real estate fraud. There was something called rating agencies, which were called the third-party trusted verification process. They would be independently putting ratings on bonds that were fraudulently recreated, and they were getting AAA ratings. So you ask yourself, well, why would they put AAA ratings on bonds that were eventually going to go down 50% in value, which aren't supposed to happen for AAA rated bonds?
Right.
Well, the volume of these bonds being created was such that it made so much money for these rating agencies, they went along with it. The corollary, then you take this to the medical world.
Yeah.
And we find out that the FDA, which approved this drug, gets 75% of the drug arm of their, FDA does other things, but the drug arm gets 75% of their budget from those who they regulate.
Yes, the passage of the Bayh-Doyle Act of 1980 is what paved the way for that to happen.
Correct, and it's become a leviathan.
Yes.
Also, couple that with the revolving door, where you work at the FDA for 5 years, and then you somehow mysteriously end up at 10x your salary at a pharmaceutical company because you're an expert, or maybe you did favors. The most glaring conflict of interest was Scott Gottlieb, who was the chair of the FDA, parachuted into being on the board of Pfizer.
Also Julie Gebberding. She was another one that went revolving door.
So many. My
favorite quote from pharmaceutical companies about the safety science was from a woman named Katherine Janssen, who was the head of R&D for the Pfizer-BioNTech team. And she did this wonderful interview where she was describing the process of manufacturing for the COVID-19 vaccines. And this isn't a direct quote, so I'm not looking at it, but she said, like, we couldn't, you know, normally there's many years between, between research and manufacturing. We couldn't wait for data this time. We had to do so much at risk. We were building the plane while we were flying it. And she went on to talk about how that was the most amazing experience, getting to build the plane while she was flying it. And here we are.
Yeah, and it's even worse. It's come out, and this is a fact, that I told you earlier when I introduced myself that why I didn't take the vaccine. When you go from laboratory production to billions of doses,
yep,
there's a problem.
Yes.
You have to scale it.
Yes.
And the drug that was approved was with the laboratory manufacturing process. The one that went in all your arms was the factory billions of doses.
Yes.
They're different, and it was a bait and switch. Now, the original production is not good either, but it seems to be worse in the factory production. So they're not, both are bad.
Yep.
Both should never have been approved, but you're even more bamboozled than you think. It's this bad.
And also, they weren't clear with people about what emergency use authorization meant and what, you know, coverage and engagement with the PREP Act, you know, interventions really meant for the consumer, which was that you assumed all risk. There was no requirement for clinical testing. There was no requirement to do any of the normal stuff that they do, which for vaccines is less than pharmaceutical drugs, period. But they did not consider us at all.
Well, and the propaganda campaign, I live on the island of Maui, and the public service announcements from wherever they were coming from were, go get your COVID-19 vaccine. This is early 2021. It's been approved by the FDA.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't approved.
Yep. It was never approved.
Yeah. It was authorized.
Yep.
There's a distinction.
Yes.
And so people thought, good, FDA, yep, good.
Right.
And then doctors who looked to the FDA as a governing body of authority heard that, and they said good as well. There wasn't a lot of thought that went into this.
Yeah, they did not consider, and there was no informed consent given. And when we look at these numbers that are astronomical, and I think hard for the average person to really sit with what you were talking about in terms of three standard deviations, about that lightning analogy was great. How do you think we as humanity are going to be able to move forward absorbing, even just in the U.S., so many people out of society, so many people who can't contribute, who are now on a different course of, you know, medical dependency than they would have been otherwise? Like, how do you see us moving forward successfully?
Well, let's go over the numbers a little bit.
Okay.
This is what I testified to in front of Ron Johnson several weeks ago. I gave what was called the pandemic scorecard, and I framed it, regardless of what you think caused this, this is an epic fail. More excess deaths post-interventions, vaccines, lockdowns,
yep,
no disabilities in 2020, excess disabilities in 21 and 22, and then a category we call injury or lost work time and absences. So we've calculated the deaths are pretty easy. That's a hard number. That's about 1.1 million excess deaths since 21. Then we have about 4 million disabilities. So you get, you know, 5.1 death and disabled. Then you add in, we calculated what we think are people chronically missing work or sick. That's like 28.6 million for a total of 33 million overall Americans affected. So either dead, disabled, or injured. And the problem is these are buckets and there's a funnel. Mm-hmm. So injured can turn into disabled. Disabled can turn into dead. Morbidity leads mortality. So these buckets aren't static. Mm-hmm. So it's a funnel.
Yep.
And so if you take the 33 million, it's about 350 million people in the U.S. So that's, let's call it 10%. But if you then take, if you blame the vaccine, which we do, 75% of the country took the vaccine, we think. That's potentially 13% of that population has been affected. So these numbers are big.
Yes.
Big numbers.
Big numbers.
So what does that mean going forward? So what we don't know are the median, there's short-term effects. Death is the most severe adverse reaction. And then there's other problems. We don't know the medium to long-term effects. And what we're discovering, unfortunately, is in the most recent, the UK paper last year and the CDC, cancers are on the rise. So that's another problem. And if you don't believe me, look at the pharmaceutical industry. They're gobbling up cancer companies like there's no tomorrow.
I'm sure it's very coincidental.
Yeah. And if you don't believe that, You can look at the cancer treatment spending nationally, which is now up 14% starting in 2021. The compound annual growth rate used to be 1.7% long term. Now it's 6.9. So cancer has become a growth industry. So long term, we have a set of people that we're going to have to care for that are no longer functioning. Yep. We have the continued deaths that are going to occur. And then we have chronically sick people who, due to their absences, are lower productivity workers. And even when they're at work, maybe working at half to 75% of their capacity. So it's a huge economic impact to the country, to other Western nations that did this, for decades to come.
Yeah. Not to mention the huge emotional and social toll that this is going to take from having a loved one who's disabled and going through that process and walking that through with them and having to, you know, deal with shortages of all those workers not able to do their jobs. I mean, this is, it's so hard to wrap my head around what's happening, even though I see it all around me and so does everyone else.
Well, we see things occurring in the real world. We see restaurants unable to hire people.
Yep.
They can't staff. Yep. We see production supply chain issues. And now we're seeing safety issues in the airlines.
Yep.
All over the place. Yes. The United Airlines maybe.
Didn't they have the 11th incident in a month? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if any of you have ever traveled, you've noticed that flights are delayed a lot. The weather's fine. They'll claim weather, but they'll claim what they won't claim is staff shortages, right? People calling in sick. And so if absence rates are going up and a captain gets sick and that happens with enough regularity, it backs up the whole, just-in-time inventory. That's why everything gets backed up.
Yep. Commercial airline pilots are highly trained. You don't just find one somewhere.
Right.
Right.
And when someone's sick, that's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not saying dead or disabled. They're just not, they're out for 2 days.
Chronic absenteeism.
Normally, you know, they would suck it up if they had a little sniffle and come in and do whatever they were going to do.
So this is a really hard thing, I know, for people to kind of come to terms with. And it can, you know, at least when I'm out in the public, or talking to anybody, really, it brings up just this tremendous feeling of kind of anxiety about how are we going to move forward? How are we going to absorb this? They're really resistant to kind of being able to sit with what that data really implies and what that means for all of us. And then also to kind of deal with the reality that our government is still pushing these on pregnant women, on infants 6 months of age and older, and they're still incentivizing this. What are some things that an individual, just a normal person, can do to help themselves feel more empowered, to help themselves navigate this time?
So one of the biggest issues you and I probably run into is cognitive dissonance.
Because
to accept what we're saying is true has knock-on implications that just kind of paralyze people.
Absolutely.
So to help with that, you have to get to acceptance super quick. You can't go through the normal stages of grief, which are denial, anger, depression, and then acceptance. You definitely can't get depressed about this. Yeah. You definitely can't get angry because that's not going to do you any good. But what you can do is get to acceptance, then action. And action is something as simple as just alerting other people. And if we get enough people that are aware of this, things will change. And we need to understand also that when fraud occurs, they double down. I saw this on Wall Street with Enron. Enron, they didn't admit we committed fraud until they were in handcuffs. So even though the government's still saying, yes, this is a cover up. Despite the fact that, but the CDC is still saying this, well, they have to until they go to jail. So we have to alert the populace. Okay. Then we have to get people in office that can investigate this. In the meantime, the more people who know why they've been disabled can then find solutions to help. Because if you go to a general practitioner that's not on board with the vaccine maybe causing this, you will get the wrong treatment protocol. they will start giving you drugs that have nothing to do with the core problem.
Right. Which they're is not the treating vaccine. It as a vaccine injury, right?
Vaccine injury, which requires a whole separate holistic protocol to detoxify that. So we have to, as a nation, identify the problem so we can heal people. And until then, there's going to be people not knowing what's going on, going to doctors, getting pills that treat symptoms that they don't really understand.
Right. And treatment that ultimately doesn't restore them to health.
No, it could make them worse. I mean, I have personal experience with antidepressants. I made the mistake of treating mild anxiety and depression with antidepressants in 2011, and it made me clinically depressed.
Yeah.
And then once I figured that out, I healed myself. I got off all the drugs, got away from psychiatrists and therapists, and took care of it myself, which was a long process, but it can be done.
And you're worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it's only too late when you're dead, and you're always worth it. So hearing that, I feel really grateful that we have our outreach program at TFEC, because that is exactly what we're doing. And hearing you, our mission to inform this, you know, into the community at large, statewide, and to back that up with legislation seems to be the best course.
That's correct. And you're also on the front lines doing the work and helping people get to acceptance as quickly as they can. You want to skip the first three stages of grief. You don't want to, because depression, you can't get depressed. You have to get into, this is real. I'm accepting that that I've been lied to. Now I act. You do not muck around in that other nonsense. It doesn't
even
serve
with
any purpose.
All the insanity happening, I feel optimistic that this is what we needed to wake up to become aware of, getting involved and being engaged again and finding that something that we can do for our communities and doing it. And it's an opportunity, at least as I see it. Maybe I'm very optimistic. But when I'm out connecting with others, they're willing to connect with me and they're willing to have a discussion about it. And we're willing to help educate them in a way that doesn't make them feel shut off or defensive. And I found that when we take that approach of really connecting with them with love and building bridges and looking at it that way, not as an us versus them or shaming them for making different choices or even asking about their individual choices. I mean, has that been your experience out in the community? I know that you talk to even more people than I do.
Well, you're correct. We don't want to get into this, gee, I was so smart, I didn't take the vaccine, dope. Because unfortunately, so many people were propagandized. They were victims of propaganda, and they didn't know. And a lot of people, honestly, didn't know and just trusted because they're busy. They have bills to pay. There should be no guilt or shame. We need to convert as many people over to RFI. The other thing we need to frame is, as bad as this is, it exposed what had been going on for 50 years.
Yes.
This is not new.
No, it is not new.
And the reason why it's been exposed is because the numbers are so large, it shows up in the metadata. Yes. You got to go back. There were drugs. Vioxx was a drug that killed hundreds of thousands of people, and Merck hid that for years, finally was caught, and then, you know, they paid a fine and we kept rolling along.
Right.
And this is the system we've had. The system has been unfortunately captured for decades.
And honestly, we're lucky to be able to sue the manufacturers of Vioxx for harms caused and to discover that there was fraud, because vaccines, whether it's on the childhood schedule or covered under the PrEP Act of 2005, you don't have that option as a vaccine recipient to do that. There is no court of law. It's a special master system. There is no process of discovery. There's no way for us to know that they knew, because the manufacturer themselves isn't even involved in that process of seeking recompense for the injured. And that is something that I love to tell everyone. I'm sure that you do too, that the reason that we know that they knew about the heart attacks and Vioxx, and the reason that we know about the lead in baby powder, is because we could sue them and go through a process of discovery and learn that information. And we do not have that option as vaccine recipients.
Correct. The only thing I think that might throw a wrinkle into this, and there's hope, is if we can prove that there was fraud. Fraud vitiates all contracts, and if you got immunity from some legislation and you committed fraud, There'll be, I think, in the future, case law created once the public is aware of what happened. There'll be a trial judge who will say, you violated the spirit of immunity, and that'll be that. That'll be case law. So right. the court of public opinion is where we win, and that's how laws right. change. This immunity, people say, oh, Ed, it'll never – no, well, if you get enough people activated – And a trial lawyer or a trial judge has family members and he sees the fraud before him, then we get case law, new case law.
Okay. So I think to recap, the injuries are devastating. And you can learn more on financetechnologies.com, finance with a PH.
Yep. Go to the Humanity Projects tab and hit projects. It's all there. I put out on Twitter several weeks ago a list of all our projects. Even I was impressed. It's literally project after project. It runs the gamut from excess more. And there, a lot of these charts are interactive. You can put in your own age cohorts. You can look at total population. All the Western nations, excess mortality. It's got disability data, U.S. disability data, U.K. It's got an examination of the clinical trials and how those adverse events are of the same magnitude as what we're seeing in the population. By the way, what we saw in the clinical trials, the study should have ended.
It should have never gotten this far, period.
There was a safety signal then. It should have ended then.
There was.
Yeah. So yes. And then we go into, specific disabilities in the UK, which we are pretty sure occurring in the US, cardiovascular in the UK, now cancers in the US. We're putting out a neurological report, excess deaths from neurological and disabilities. And we'll be putting out another cancer study in the US for the older age group, which is devastating. The numbers are very large.
And that the most important thing that we can do is to find our center and to move to acceptance and to share this information in the best possible way to build bridges with it. Yes?
Correct. That's the way. And what we can't do is point fingers. The more people that we get on our side, the better. Obviously, there are those in both camps that are, people who, in our camp that are very vicious towards the vaccinated. And then there are people that are COVIDians that this has become a religion. We ignore those two groups. We try to get the middle. Ignore the religious dogma folks and get the middle.
Right. And there's so many in the middle.
Yeah.
And as an individual, you can reach so much farther than you originally think. And, I'm so glad that you're sharing that message, that the important thing is to share the message
with
as much love and as much accuracy as you possibly can, so that they will help internalize that information and join you in taking action towards pushing back against this catastrophe that has been man-made, that still needs accountability, and that we need to come together as a society and ensure that this kind of thing, this Operation Warp Speed, this callous disregard for our care can never, ever happen again. I am so thankful, Ed, for you joining us today. I have so much appreciation and admiration for the work that you're doing in the world. I know that you're doing it on a volunteer basis. You don't have to be doing any of this. And the fact that you are out there spending your time and your talent and your energy to collate this data for us to be a watchtower for what is coming and what is happening, I just cannot express enough appreciation. It really does help me on the hard days to know that I am not alone in trying to do what I can do, that there are so many others trying to do what they can do. And, here at TFEC, we are here to help loop you in and find that something that you can do and help you do it. Thank you so much for joining us. And I really have enjoyed this interview, and I hope that you have too.
Thank you for listening to the Shot Callers podcast. Please, if you found value in this content, rate us and share the podcast with a friend. It's a great way to get the message out and to empower everyone to make informed decisions. Until next time, never forget, we are the Shot Callers.